Start this all over again. Today is the 30th of June, 2014. This is the Shrine of the Ages at Grand Canyon National Park. Today is the memorial for the 1956 air crash between United and Transworld Airlines. And today we are with
Thomas E. Sulpizio, Tom Sulpizio. And I'm the son of Thomas J. Sulpizio, who was a passenger on the United Flight 718.
Can you spell your last name, please?
And the name is spelled S as in Sam, U L, P as in Paul, I Z I O.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Tom Martin. So, where should we start?
Well, I was 17 months old when the event occurred, exactly 17 months because I'm January 30th born. And my mom and I were and dad were living in an apartment in suburban Philadelphia in southern New Jersey. He was an electronics engineer along with another passenger whose family is here, the Lasby family. He and Ray Lasby were electronic engineers and project managers for a company in Philadelphia called REHEM, R-H-E-E-M. There's a lot of mystery surrounding the nature of their trip. There's a lot of mystery surrounding the project work they were on, but it's based on previous projects and materials I have, not with me today, but in the collection of mementos back in New Jersey. It's clear that they were working on defense-related or military-related projects in the area of avionics. Either pilot simulation systems or pilot enhanced performance systems, we don't know. But we do know that the work was classified, and my mom never knew what he was working on. He kept that pretty much top secret. So to this day, in fact, here with ceremony here in the 30th of June at the park, I was able to speak with the Lasbys and others and find that perhaps there was more to their trip than we know, that it might have been classified, and that they may have been, because computers didn't exist, everything they had would have been hard copy papers, blueprints, schematics, diagrams. So it's possible they were carrying classified information that had to be retrieved. This could be a very interesting investigation moving forward. That's an interesting side twist to this whole tragedy, is that we had the occasion of some national defense projects that had to be either covered up or at least the materials retrieved. So that's something worth pursuing. What's been an interesting enigma over the years has been this photo, which has been on display in my mom's house for years and years, of my dad and Mr. Lasby. And there's actually three photos. I'm going to try to find the other two, but this one we framed, and I have the original from the REHEM Corporation, which came with a letter I sent to Kim. And it just indicates that they're in Santa Monica, California. One of the things I'm going to do as a homework from this meeting here today is find the exact spot today where this photo was taken, just to show what it looks like today. And I'll either reach out to the Santa Monica Historical Society or the Santa Monica Library. I live about 80-90 miles from Santa Monica, so I can do this maybe as a little side project. Not urgent, but something worthwhile pursuing.
Fine.
It's just kind of fun from a family history point of view to know where this photo actually was taken. I don't have. Oh, go ahead, Kim.
Just about the photo. If you haven't said already, who sent it to you? How did that come about?
They came from the employer, REHEM Corporation.
Okay.
How and who took it is a mystery. Obviously, they had a photographer take it, or a photographer took it. It obviously wasn't in a camera on the flight. That film wouldn't have survived. So this was taken on the ground and kept in Los Angeles.
Did REHEM have an office in L.A.?
I don't know. And we don't know the exact nature of the meeting, whether it was with an aerospace company in Los Angeles, Lockheed. Douglas in Long Beach, Lockheed is in Burbank, or Rand in Santa Monica. So knowing who, he was there Monday through Friday, he and Ray were there Monday through Friday, knowing whom they met is an would be an interesting, it would be part of this mystery as to what was the reason for their trip and whether they were carrying classified information back on the flight. Knowing who took the photos would be an interesting piece of that puzzle. And the fact that it came from the employer means that the film was developed, the prints were developed on the West Coast and sent to Philadelphia. I think the date of that letter is in July, well, sometime in July. I have to pull up my computer, which is, well, it's actually on my BlackBerry, but we don't need that right now. So those are the things that kind of are interest to me. I do want to catalog a lot of materials that I have in a box in New Jersey. Mom kept them, but she refused to look at them after a while. So I haven't bothered looking at them for a long time.
Did she ever talk with you about how this event impacted her?
Well, it hit her very hard because she had lost her mother at age 51 just a few months before. So when the Western Union telegram arrived the day of July 1st, that's how we learned of the crash. The family mobilized, and she then moved in with her father, who was widowed because of his wife, her mom having died. So we pulled together as a new family unit, and the three of us lived in a house then in suburban Philadelphia, New Jersey side of Philadelphia, from 56 until I moved to college in 77. So a good 20 years.
Have you seen that telegram?
I have it.
What does it essentially say?
I don't want to trust my memory, but it confirmed that the flight was missing and it was suspected to be a crash.
And did that come from TWA?
I believe it came either from United or Ream.
Okay.
Yeah, it came either from the employer or it came from United. Remember, there was no email. Telephones were still rather primitively or hesitantly used. Telegrams were still the mode of communication in the 50s.
If you're willing, the museum collection would be really great to get a copy of that.
That would be phenomenal to have. I think that would be just a piece of history captures the era. Mm-hmm. So I'll definitely pull that together. I mean, I have three types of materials. I have materials relating to his employment at Ream and RCA as electronics engineer for about 7 or 8 years because he graduated at age 22. He was 30 when he perished, so 8 years. I have that collection, and some of it at the end, of course, would capture the work he was doing, which would have been the reason for the trip. The second set of mementos, memorabilia, would be related to published materials concerning the crash. So materials that you have perhaps already. We have a few more clippings. We have local Philadelphia newspaper clippings. So these people had local Homa newspaper clippings. We have local hometown clippings. Those would be nice to make sure they're preserved. And, I should put them in plastic and then they could be scanned. And you don't need more Life magazine displays.
Right, there's local ones and they have obituaries and things like that.
That'd be great.
Yeah, and so that public information and relative is either a microfiche or I have it in clippings. The third would be communications related to the period of the crash. So letters from my dad to my mother while he was traveling, either on a previous trip or even on this trip. So cross country mail would have been 1 week. So I think he may have dispatched a letter. Since he arrived on a Monday, he probably dispatched a letter, maybe dispatched a letter midweek. I don't think he would have dispatched a letter on the day leaving because he was going right to Philadelphia. This is important, this photo, because it was taken, let's say, somewhere between 12 and 18 hours before the flight took off at 8 a.m. This was taken on June 29th, let's say in the afternoon. This is a photocopy.
And the photo is showing two gentlemen, they're both in suits, they've got nice shoes on, Your dad's wearing a nice sort of lighter colored tie.
Mm-hmm.
And
No hats yep. because it was California. That was the only acknowledgement of casualness is that they didn't wear their fedoras, but they both wore gray, probably gray flannel suits, or no, they're not flannel, just gray suits mm-hmm. and white tie, white shirts, and then as you say, a light tie on my dad and a
dad's got a silk tie. Both had their top buttons on their jackets done, but not their bottom buttons.
Yep.
And as if they'd been sitting, maybe.
My dad's.
It's nice.
My grandfather, my dad's father, was a tailor, so he had impeccable suits.
Nice.
And it looks like it was cuffed. But this this photo, there's similar scenes in Palisades Park in Santa Monica. So, you know, on a Thursday before leaving, I believe the 30th was a Friday that year. On a Thursday before leaving, why would they just casually meander into Santa Monica Palisades Park unless they had free time? And okay, it's a nice spot in the 50s.
And the gentleman they're with is the person from Reims going to take them to the airport or to their hotel. Just throwing in some
whatever. It couldn't be the day of the takeoff because that was 8 a.m. in the morning. I wouldn't think this would have been. You would have had.
On the way to their hotel?
You know,
maybe?
Looking at the shadows here, it's a pretty. It's a pretty, you know, I'm not an investigator, but that's a pretty steep shadow. So, but the mornings would be foggy in Santa Monica typically this time of the year. They wouldn't be bright sunshine. So this was perhaps later in the day. I would say this might be about this time.
After the meeting.
Yeah, after the meeting.
Somebody came out, they went outside, took a picture.
Correct.
Maybe. Yeah.
So I'm gonna research where RAND Corporation was. I know they're in Santa Monica because I knew somebody that worked there, and it's a think tank.
Fun.
It's a defense contractor. They've been in business since the 40s. But that's just a guess. Mm-hmm. That's just strictly a shot in the dark.
Hmm.
But yeah. Santa Monica was, you know, it captured the glamour of L.A., Hollywood, Santa Monica. I mean, you heard somebody today talk about Hollywood and Los Angeles quite a bit. Dad had been to California. I think this was his second trip, if I'm not mistaken. May have been his first trip. I'm not sure. That I'll have to research. But it was his first or second trip. A trip out west was a big deal. People were still taking the Route 66.
66, yes.
To take an air trip to the West Coast was, you know, with these latest, what was it called, the Constellation and the DC-6 was the United, was probably doing about 300 miles per hour. So with connections, it was a 12, 13-hour trip. So you get back 3 hours. So it was a 10-hour trip. So they probably spent all day Monday traveling to California. And then Friday would have been, let's say, leave at 8 a.m., they would have gotten back 10 at night into Philadelphia. So when he didn't show up, and this is my mom who's now deceased, she just passed away 6 months, 7 months ago. She said when he didn't show up, it wasn't totally unusual because I guess he was going to take the train or I don't remember how he was going to get from the airport. It's 35 miles to where we were living. But it didn't surprise her initially that he didn't arrive. And there was but then she had the evening, I just remember, she had the late night news on. And there was a certain broadcaster who did the Philadelphia news for about 3 decades, and he announced that there had been an airline crash. And this was on the 11 o'clock news. So the crash occurred early in the day, I believe.
Morning.
Occurred, let's see, if they left L.A. 1 hour and a half out, so they left at 8
a.m. Took off at
8:30. It would have been 10 a.m. here local time.
Mm-hmm.
So at 11 or 10 o'clock news, it came on. Again, she was not surprised. He had not arrived home yet, but when she heard there was an airplane crash. And there was a little bit of doubt, and then family members started calling and asked what flight was he on. And she didn't know the exact flight number, but she knew it was United. And at that point, she was getting very troubled, as she put it. I just realized, I told somebody, she woke up the next morning with the telegram, but she was actually distraught all night, and the telegram arrived probably at the crack of dawn. Western Union actually would deliver a telegram in those days.
Hmm.
Bring it to your house.
Hmm.
And that's when the grieving started for her. I was too young to grieve. So I told someone, you know, actually, it's a little bit like learning a language. If you're in a country at the right age, you can learn another language or multiple languages effortlessly. If somebody passes away before you knew them and got to love them and got to be dependent upon them, it's very abstract. It's very abstract. It's be like somebody that was born maybe or in pregnancy and was born after their father perished. So I was in that stage where I was able then to be adopted into our extended family. My grandfather, like I said, made a home for us. So I, you know, the three of us were in that new family unit. And Mom, she didn't like me to tell this, but she did remarry in this 1970-ish for a couple of years, but it didn't work out. So she only remarried very briefly. So that was. Getting back to the events that unfolded, we have about 100 family members, extended family members in the region. And that's also a tremendous support group. So when you have a tragedy of this type, you want to make sure that family steps in and fills the gap. And I think some of the first, second generation immigrant families from Europe especially, or now from Latin America, I think that exists. And it's not as strong with people that have moved away from that European immigration, especially among Italians, Irish, Germans, maybe less so the Scottish or British, but and now with the Hispanics, you have that strong family sense that even though there's a tragedy, the family knows how to step in.
Did you have any uncles that sort of came in and?
I had three uncles,
and some time, more time
they,
with
they
you?
Definitely spent time with me. Mm-hmm. One just around, just living, you know, my grandfather's son, so living right around the corner, and two uncles in the Philadelphia area, and something noteworthy that I will try to interview. My dad has one surviving sister left. She's 91, so. She's the only one surviving now who would have been close to this event, and I will see her this weekend. And without upsetting her too much, I will try to discuss gently with her the events.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's pretty sharp, and I spoke to her on the phone about a month ago, so she's still very sharp at 91.
Okay.
So she may fill in some of the gaps that I don't know, because I'm only going by what my mom told me, and by what's in our box of memorabilia or mementos, and a little bit of stories that I've picked up over the years.
So a simple digital recorder, $40-$50, makes a WAV file, makes an electronic file.
Okay.
On a thumb drive, you can send it to Kim, and we could give you one of these Jesus gifts.
I wonder if my computer would work as well. I have a
audacity.com. You can download that.
Yeah, okay.
It's a free download.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to work the program, but it's very.
Because I have a mic on the computer.
Yeah. Absolutely, you can do that.
It should then go right to a thumb drive easily once you form a video, once you find an audio file.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Some people use their phones.
I think that's trickier. I'd have to have her talk into like my voicemail to do that. Mm. And I think there's a limit of 2 minutes, so
yeah.
I'm not sure I want to open up old wounds for her, because for her this is going to be very painful.
Absolutely. Understood.
And you know, that was her brother.
Yes.
And she's 91, and when I had come to the canyon in 88 and I brought pictures, photographs we had taken here of the shrine or the cemetery next door, I mean, his two sisters, my other aunt was alive at that time. We all were in tears, so it's not an easy thing to do for an immediate family member like that.
I've seen a lot of tears today. I've cried myself.
Yeah. So I'd prefer to do a little bit of a free, rather than an audio. Maybe I'll do just take some notes and fill in some of the gaps that I don't have.
That'd be great.
Be good to know when she found out, how she found out.
You might mention to her, just if it helps, that. Historians are a little slow, but we finally figured it out. And she has an amazing story that history would like to capture and take forward, if she's willing to help with that. It is not going to be easy. It doesn't make it any easier. But
yeah, she's pretty stoic, though. My Aunt Marie is pretty hard nail. His is hard as nails.
Okay.
She can handle it.
Okay. But just so she knows that this would be for historical, not for you as a family, yes, of course, to learn more about your father, absolutely.
Well, I'm going to show her the photos from today of the plaque, and I'm going to show her, you know, some of the receptions. I didn't take the best pictures in the world, but they're good enough to explain to her what is going on. She's still sharp as can be. She has no dementia at all.
Great.
So,
great.
I mean, this is a lady that could easily live to, you know, mid-90s, maybe even 100.
See if she's willing.
So
that'd be great.
We'll see if I can take some notes. I don't need that waiver, because then I'll just I'll use my waiver as the interpretation of what she's telling me.
That'd be great. Thank you.
I'll be the reporter.
Okay. So after that initial telegram, do you know if that's how they kept in touch with you all? Do you have other telegrams, or?
I'm going to have to search to see what other communications we have or communications. I'm sure we got some phone calls from Ream at that point. I mean, come on, the phone system was in business. You could do, there were area codes. We definitely, from Philadelphia to New Jersey, you know, that this was in the Middle Ages. So there were phones, and I'm sure she got phone calls. What happened is we had a couple of relatives on her side who were very intelligent, college educated. One was a dentist. He stepped in right away and became her advisor. And he happened to have a relative on his wife's side who was a lawyer. And we started discussing immediately I know that they started discussing finances and settlements and insurance policies and things of that sort within a matter of a few days. I do remember the lawsuit was a bit contentious. My mother was very innocent in these matters, so, you know, to sue a company was very unprecedented in the 50s. To sue a company for damages for loss of life that was not related to product liability or to criminal intent was also very unprecedented. We had a different jurisprudence system in those days, where the company, the corporation, was viewed innocent until proven guilty. Or if there was an event such as an airplane crash, you had to show there was malintent, there was mismanagement of maintenance, that there was inappropriate action by an employee, which had been the pilot. So I think what they used is, and I'm not a lawyer, but what they used was to show that, you know, the pilots used poor judgment. Now, the government cannot be sued, so the government was held harmless. But the airlines did not want this. They did not want this to open the floodgates for every single incident to cause a lawsuit. So I have to check whether it went to a jury trial or whether it was a settlement. I believe it was a settlement with all the passengers that signed up for each of the two aircraft, either TWA or United.
I think that's right.
It was a settlement.
Yeah.
So we got X dollars, and they used different crazy formulas about what his life earnings would be, and they threw a little bit of, you know, premium on there for loss of life and that kind of stuff. It was a joke. Mm. You know, by today's standards, it was really quite small. But what is noteworthy, I'm trying to get my mother to expand on this. We were it's a fairly Republican town and a fairly Democratic state. New Jersey's fairly Democratic, but there are Republican sections, especially around the affluent suburbs of New York and around the affluent suburbs of Philadelphia. And people were kind of surprised. They were a little surprised that she was suing a company for loss of her husband's life when the airline didn't cause that life to be lost. It's just, remember, you have to put your mind back in the 50s. They're asking, well, where was the intent? It was an accident. It was an act of God. It was an act of God. So, again, how we've changed as a society, that also was one of the first major lawsuits coming out of an airplane crash. Another first as a result of this crash.
That's right.
So that's something worthwhile that has not been discussed very much. What we got was, you know, was a token, but it was it would help her raise me, help put me to college, and so forth.
And we heard $100,000 was one settlement award today. When you think about it, you know, okay, the average earning
1956.
He was at 12,000 a year, so, you know, you take that times, say, a career at that point, 30 years old, say 35 years, you're looking at $350,000. I mean, we didn't even get his life salary.
Right. That's right. That's right. Yep.
It was a discount. Today, it's multiples of one's life salary.
And did your mother have to go to work?
No. She was the talk of the town of being, you know, the rich lady that she got paid so much money.
This is a common thread.
Yep. She got paid so much money. She used to dress me very well. She looked really sharp. She was a very tasteful lady. She used to drive nice cars. So everyone assumed she'd gotten $1 million, or the equivalent of $1 million in those days, which might have been $250,000. And in fact, she only got $100,000. The insurance was actually pretty generous. He took out it was a policy that paid double because of accidental loss of life. So it was probably $160,000 or $165,000 insurance payout.
Good.
And then the company had a life insurance policy for employees that might have been 1 year of salary. So you roll that all together, and it made for a very comfortable living. By no means rich, mm-hmm. but comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so there was a little bit of jealousy, and I think that's why people were clucking their tongues, saying, "Well, how can you sue a company? It was an act of God." You know, that's just normal small town. Mm-hmm. Discussion. It's kind of like this movie that called Nebraska that was an Academy Award nominee last year with Bruce Dern, that he made the story up that he won the lottery, so everybody in Nebraska was trying to get divs on his money.
Right.
When it was actually a fabricated story, he didn't win the lottery. Very good, almost an Academy Award winner. And he's a good actor. So that's...
Did that trickle down to you as a child? Was there any, you know, did that come down into your level on the schoolyard?
No. No, because I made it a point of being just the opposite of my mother. I'm extremely frugal, and I have still the first nickel I earned as a teenager. I'm saying that, you know, jokingly, but that's true. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's not because of this incident. That's because on my father's side, they are very, 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 very cautious with money. And that was... my dad's side of the family, it's just the way they were, and it came to me genetically, I guess. It was not through nurturing, because my mother was very liberal with spending. She bought the best of everything. Mm-hmm. So, no, I never had any comments about money when I was in the school year. I went to very good schools, went to a private school for high school, college prep. I went to a private college outside Philadelphia, and paid my tuition from the money that came about as a result of the accident.
Apparently there was a third set aside for dependent children.
Right, it was $38,000.
Okay.
And then went to grad school with other people's money, used other people's money at that point. So I actually have been managing, I took my mother's portfolio away from the bank. She had it in trust when it was paid by the airline, went to a trust fund. And I took that away when I was 21 or 22 and started managing it on my own ever since I was 21 or 22. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And got rid of all those fees, the 3% a year fees, mm-hmm. got rid of all that. That's so 1970s. And got fired the lawyer who was getting a retainer at that point. It was ridiculous. Still getting a retainer, $300 a year. Oh, yes. This was the 60s and 70s. Big companies, big banks, lawyers were gods in those days. This accident occurred in a different era. You've got to put yourself in that 50s, 60s, and 70s era. You know, CNN has a great series on right now called The 60s, and that so captures, I'm a child of the 60s. It so captures the mood at that time. So, this accident is almost a turning point in a lot of ways. It was a turning point for aviation. It was a turning point for corporation liability. And it was a turning point for 128 families. But for society, it was much bigger than the 128 families. And I've gotten over it. You know, quite frankly, I've never shed a tear for my father. I mean, passed away when I was an infant. It's just because I don't have that recollection.
Now, today we heard somebody talking about how her mother never told her that all she would hear was that her father will be back shortly. It sounds like your mother was very open from the start.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can't, you know, you can't hide the fact you don't have a father.
Right.
You know, you become cognizant or self-aware at age 3 or 4, and, you know, where's dad? Well, dad passed away in an airplane crash. That's it. What's there to say? I mean, it's...
But it she was forthcoming with you at an early age with that.
Well, we had these lawsuits going on. We had this money flowing in. I mean, it all... there was nothing to hide. It's she kept the amounts confidential, but the fact that he passed away and was, you know, over the Grand Canyon... That will ever be my recollection of the Grand Canyon until I visited here in 88, is the Grand Canyon is where Dad passed away. But, you know, I think it was special coming here in 88, coming here with friends in 89, and then coming back here quite a number of years later for this more focused event. It's the Grand Canyon changes from being just this abstract place out west where a dear parent, regrettably, the aircraft's, hey, they could have fallen over Winslow, they could have fallen over the volcano, they could have fallen into, any place.
They could have had a mid-air war, Kansas.
Exactly. It's like Schenectsville in Pennsylvania, where the 9/11 attacks were. It just happens that it occurred there.
Yes.
You know, that was a just chance. Falling on Desert Tower was chance. That was not something, there was no terrorism. Also, the fact that it came crashing down in the national park was completely chance. It could have just as easily been on Navajo, it could have been on reservation ground. Actually, I understand from somebody during the discussions who went to visit the site, it is Indian reservation to get to the site.
Well, actually, what that was, was in 76 when they were hauling some of the bigger pieces out. They took them to the reservation, and then from there they were hauled to for scrap metal or whatever, but some of it never... So that's what they visited.
But the only way to get out of that part of the canyon is to pass through, Hopi?
Navajo.
I said it correctly when I said Navajo.
Yes.
Yeah, so I...
very remote site, and you could assume that, you know, they were maybe doing some sightseeing over... Yeah. Maybe they weren't. Maybe they were simply... it's hard to say.
I know.
But there we are.
I think it was the Cooks, the gentleman who spoke. Is that his name?
Yes.
Ray Cook. Yeah, it was his wife that mentioned it. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not into this event anywhere near as much as some of your top 10% people that have really made it an avocation to investigate it further. In fact, my mother would say, what do you care about that for? It's over and done with. Why relive it? Why relive the past? Why go back there and open up a wound? And it's she said that with the 06 commemoration, and then when I showed her the letter last summer with we were going to have the dedication of the National Historic Site was started, she said, and I mentioned this in the reception, what does this mean to me? Why do we have to bring this up? And I said, well, it's a very nice gesture by the National Park Service to make this something more important. And she said, well, that's old. And of course, my mother was old at the time. That's old, and we're just, it's not something we're going to talk about. My aunt's might be a little bit more interested in this. His sister she'll be more interested in it, just because to her this is something that she probably... First of all, she's in better health. Secondly, she'll be interested in the actions of the National Park Service.
But I would also, if I may, in defense of your mom, she's trying to heal. She's trying to sort out her life and move forward with this to someone that she was very near and dear and looked to. And so for you as a 17-month-old trying to get on with your life, it's okay, this happened. I understand this. Let's move forward. The tracks are different, so I can really appreciate her sensitivity to that.
Right. No, but she didn't mind. Sure. She liked coming here in 88, and she was absolutely thrilled to see the shrine of this site next door, which was part of our tour. And then we took close friends of the family here the following year, and their comment was, "What a very peaceful place for your dad to rest." Because you've got the ponderosa pines. We came here in February, it was cold, and you had the wind whispering through the pines, and all I could say is, this is a very, very peaceful place for Tom to rest. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was nice.
Well, did they fly you out after for this initial ceremony? I mean, you might not remember,
When?
In 56, afterwards to...
No, my mother wouldn't get on an no one in the family would get on an airplane for 10 years. I didn't fly. My first flight was in 73, and it was an international flight, by the way, to France. My grandfather, who traveled a lot back to Italy, I think he took his first flight in the late 60s, or 72, and my mom took her first flight in 74. So we waited 16, 17 years before we boarded an aircraft. And I think what moved us to go on air, well, for me it wasn't as big a deal because I was born in the jet age, or I was brought up in the jet age. I think what moved my grandfather, my mom, and her father to travel by jet was the fact that the safety record really did improve after this event. And it, you know, and the 707 was the first really reliable jet, then the L-1011, DC-8, all these, some of them are still flying today. So that's how good they are. So they felt comfortable to travel by air in the 70s. I travel by air for a living practically, 125,000 miles a year. I mean, to come here for a weekend trip is nothing.
And so she had never been out for a ceremony.
She had never been out here till I moved to San Diego, and we made the trip in the 80s when I was living in San Diego, because it's a long drive from L.A. or San Diego to here. It's not short. It's 500 miles, 550.
It's a day trip.
It's a good full day.
Yeah, that's right.
We drove cross country from San Diego in 86, and we tried, we were on Interstate 4. We didn't want to go north of the canyon. It was way out, much out of the way on a cross-country trip. We're trying to make time. But we had family members that had said, the cemetery's in Flagstaff. You need to go check out the cemetery in Flagstaff. We didn't know it was TWA's. That was a TWA site. We didn't know till later that the United site was here in the park, and TWA was the citizen cemetery. So we actually looked around Flagstaff. It's not a big town, so we drove around for about half an hour. We finally stopped at the place for dinner, maybe a quarter of a mile from the cemetery. We didn't even know. Now I know it from remembering the restaurant and then seeing the cemetery this morning. I said, oh my God, we're just a quarter of a mile away. Wow. But we would have wasted our time. We would have just seen the monument for the TWA flight. So that was okay that we didn't stop there. But then we made it a point at that time in 86, driving across the country, I said, we're going to go to the Grand Canyon next as soon as possible when you're back in San Diego, and we'll make the trip. So we did it in a November time frame when I had a little bit of time, free time on my hands.
Nice.
And then we came back in February 89, a little bit later, with some friends that were out. They were in the wedding party. They were actually part of my mom and dad's wedding. And they're the ones that commented, what a very peaceful place it is next door here. So I haven't been back here since 89. I've had friends from Europe, colleagues, business associates who know me, and I have given them this location. Go to the Shrine of the Ages, you'll find the monument, and you'll find, I mean, you know who I am, so just look for the name. And I've had two or three people say they found it with ease, and they felt it was very special having such a monument.
Well, so. Is there a monument for your father anywhere else?
No, we don't have, we didn't have any of the remains, so we didn't have any other place for burial.
And was that hard in any way for your mother?
I don't think so.
Okay. No,
I don't think so. It wasn't hard.
Okay. Yep. It's interesting, though, the a chance to interview, and Kim has this interview, too, of Neil Newby, who ended up on a little raft in August in 56 and went from Lee's Ferry and showed up at Phantom Ranch and stopped the trip there and was interviewed by
On the river.
That's on the
river.
Yeah,
it's on the river.
So they went right through the site and went right through the crash site.
And what's the elevation of the crash site? 2,000 feet?
It's a little higher.
The United portion of it.
36, United is atop the Red Wall, so that's a little
higher. So that's even higher.
Yeah. he was interviewed by the head of the law enforcement here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the FBI came knocked on his door. Mm. And they told him that they were looking for $5 million in unsecured negotiables.
What was this? This was immediately after the crash?
This was in the fall of 1956, the spring of 1957.
So considerably later, not just a few days, but literally months later.
Well, these two guys kind of showed up, and they were like, why these two guys down there? Mm-hmm. What are they looking for? What are they after? And so there was an attempt.
So there might have been a banker on the, there might have been some bankers on the phone. Remember that all negotiable instruments in those days were not electronic, they were paper. Bonds were paper. Treasury bills and notes were paper. There was no electronic version.
And they were all being transferred on planes.
They were all being transferred. Usually you had a courier or an air marshal or something, but typically a courier. And you know, that might be why the Swiss climbers were looking. I mean, there's a little bit of a folklore that the Mr. Lasby and my dad were on defense projects. They were low-level guys. My dad was, you know, 3 years with Ream, a project, not even a project director. He was a project manager.
No, one of the things they were looking for was the mail, because the mail has to go through.
Yeah, the mail would have been the cargo section.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So there was a look for that.
Sure.
And didn't actually they find some mail, and it was actually then delivered on, burned around the edges?
Mm.
I don't know, but when we talked to a guy from the 1976 cleanup, he said they found money.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So that, I mean, just I just wanted to mention that because you're interested in, hey, what was going on?
Yeah.
There was definitely some interest in this afterwards and at the time to try to recover some of this stuff on the plane.
Also, how many flights were there a day from Los Angeles, which at that time was the fourth biggest city? It was New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, maybe LA. LA might have been the fifth biggest city in the 50s. So how many flights would there have been? None were nonstop, but how many flights would there have been from LA to Chicago? Or LA to Kansas City, there might have only been the morning flight.
Mm.
There might have been one flight a day,
right.
And none to New York.
Right.
There was no capacity to go nonstop to the East Coast.
Mm.
So this was it. This was the courier flight
right.
for all commerce from LA to the East Coast.
So that would make sense that that there was material that these guys were looking
mm-hmm.
for.
No, I'm sure my dad was he's just doing regular engineering work. He was not involved in anything,
I'm not saying he wasn't.
No.
There were other reasons to be interested in that as well.
But these two gentlemen from the same company being on this trip suggest they were either at a conference or involved in a project that involved one of these other companies. So I'll find that out.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to find that out. The Lasbys don't know anymore, and Ream has long since gone, changed business models. They're now making hot water heaters.
Sorry, I was going to say that's a name I know.
Ream Fury is called Fury. I actually have a Ream hot water heater, which I find really amusing.
Yeah.
And they moved from Philadelphia. So, you know, without reviewing the materials, I like to work with facts and not too much with memory, but, you know, I have to go by whatever I have in my mementos collection to fill in any of these gaps. And the one thing is a fact is we have this photo, and we know they were out here, so I'll try to find out whatever I can about their cause, about what it was their mission, or their reason for being here.
Definitely pass
and
stuff
I'll pass
to
that along.
That'd be great.
Because you could build a little, you know, each you could do is for 120, is it 126 or 128?
128
passengers. Build a little biography of why they were on the, why they were traveling.
Have you seen Nelson's book?
No, I haven't.
Okay, and I don't know if he's done that or not. I haven't seen the book either. I know that Dan Driscoll was trying to do that.
Okay.
Was basically write up biographies.
Mm-hmm.
Why these people are on this plane? What
brought them here?
Yes, right.
The other one, as I mentioned it in the reception, is a piece of fiction that a relative has written, which was inspired by the crash in my dad. And it was very much fiction because it was about changing history and changing, you know, a little bit about movement in time and changing history, a la the Kennedy assassination thing, changing that. What would history have been without the crash? I haven't read the piece. He writes a lot, this guy. He's got 40 publications. So it's a short story. I will see him. I'm going to try to see him this coming weekend. I'm going to see a lot of people this weekend.
Cool.
And I'll try to get an electronic copy. He's an e-author. He writes all of his books electronically.
Okay.
And I'll try to get a copy of it. That would kind of be neat, just as a fiction inspired by the crash.
And there is another one as well, in case you're curious, but Tony Hillerman's last book. And he would write mysteries about this area.
I've heard of him.
And it's called Fallen Man, and it's fiction, and you can't get to the site as easy as these characters seem to be able to. But it's based on people trying to get the securities from the plane. So
I'll definitely look that one up.
And I'm just curious because you said you haven't. You didn't miss him. You didn't, because you didn't know him. But you've kept everything, and so there is that important link.
Well, my mom did.
Okay.
I mean, I've actually got his. I have most of his engineering books that I wanted to keep, because he was a. He had a 5-year engineering degree from Drexel. He was going to take some grad school courses at Penn. So I have a lot of his books. And, I mean, they're perfectly good engineering books. They're a little bit dated. Some of them I lost in some water damage that we had in New Jersey, and we tossed those out. But I still have about 20 books, college books.
Mm-hmm.
So that I kept, because, those are good good materials to keep, regardless of, whether he had passed away naturally or through an accident. But the mementos I know where they are, and I've kept them in, Mom kept them in a box that we put away in a storage bin in a condo, which I've inherited. And I have to get to that bin and clean it out anyway. So what I'll do is I'll go get the box mementos and put it into a shipping box or a banker's box and ship it to my house here in California. This way I can build up a little binder, a little scrapbook.
And just so you know, that Kim's shop is there, and if any time you're like, okay, copies, any of that sort of stuff, it'd be great to have there to help keep building this record of this event.
Yeah.
So what are we going to learn at Ian's presentation tonight? What basically, is it similar to what was presented in 06? I only saw about 20 minutes of that as a DVD.
I'm not certain, but I think it would be slightly different in that it will be the perspective of an archaeologist on site. They've been to the site. Maybe the journey towards getting landmark status.
I want to hear that.
Maybe that, but I'm not positive.
Okay. But I do remember you opened up by, so I think it was Dan Driscoll that maybe presented last time. It was a beautiful day in Los Angeles, a great day for flying, clear skies, great weather, which is typical of Southern California and Arizona this time of the year. And there's no reason for that crash to have occurred due to weather, or there was no weather related. It was all due to just a random blind spot in the design of their flight path, and the fact those aircraft had blind spots. If you looked at the cockpit, it had very limited visibility.
You know what's interesting, because I wrote a little book on river runners, and they were actually in the canyon on the day of the crash. And they write in their logs about the weather. There was a weather disturbance over.
There was.
I was surprised that
was
Dan
it like
didn't
today
see
these
that.
Kind of clouds.
No, it was much worse.
Oh,
it was raining.
Worse.
It had been raining. The monsoon had moved in, and it was cloudy and it was raining and there was thunder and lightning.
Okay.
So
it was only in Los Angeles and the deserts of Mojave Desert that was clear weather.
But
then when you get over
here
across the Colorado River, it was
that's
or
right.
it across
was
the Arizona border, it was
that's
monsoonal.
Right.
Okay,
that's right.
I didn't know that.
And the water came up in the night. It was quite the. It was,
okay.
It was
and those monsoons
event.
Can be local, so they
absolutely.
Know, they,
yeah.
Yeah.
You
so
get
it could look clear.
Well,
one
it's
place.
It's this time of the year. There's zero chance of rain in Los Angeles and the western Mojave region, Palm Springs,
right.
and so forth.
Right.
As you move towards the, Arizona border, you get some monsoonal carryover.
You get different.
It gets more of that flow up from the Gulf of Mexico.
That's right.
Not Gulf of Mexico, Gulf of California.
That's right.
But, that's interesting. That could have played a role then, if they had gone through
I believe it did investigation, because what happened was the guy that wasn't supposed to be where he was was rear-ended by the guy that was supposed to be there. So they were both at fault.
What was 21,000 feet vector and the other one was a 19,000 foot? I thought there was a 2,000 foot of separation, which, by the way, has been increased. I think these vectors are now, the aircraft would be at 3,000 or 4,000 foot of separation, maybe 5,000 foot of separation.
To cross?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make sense because there is some variability. Yeah. So anyway, it was just interesting to put that together.
Interesting.
Thank you so much for your time with this.
Well, I don't know how much I've given you for, you know, your historic mosaic, but...
we just had zero before this, and now we have an hour.
Well, you That's have you have you. At least one person's recounting of the events partially. I don't have every detail, and I will try to close some of the gaps that exist out there.
That'd be great.
And then I think in a biography of why each passenger was on that flight would be really, really a lot of fun to put together. That's a lot of work, though.
But you could do it.
Well, your team could do it. It's going to be a project for the entire organization. It's going to be your whole historic group as well as.
It would be a big deal. It would be interesting to put together.
Yeah.
And this would be the way to do it, is with family members who would be able to make it happen.
The only way.
All right, so
great. Thank you.
Time to take a walk over to the Yavapai cafeteria and grab up something. We've got another hour and a half.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, thank you. Cool.
Thank you
very
so much for
thank you.
Listening and asking questions that I could give you something more than you had before.
I appreciate
Absolutely.
It. Thank you. And we'll make a copy of this.
Would
this
you like a copy tonight? I'll bring it to the program if you like.
I'm just thinking if I would want to play this 1 hour for my aunt, whether this would be... She's going to say, I know my aunt, that's not the way it happened at all. I could hear my aunt saying that.
And what happened?
She'll say, they didn't... We got called by United Airlines. The telegram came after. I mean, those kind of details are nice to know because she was there.
That'd be great.
I'll tell you what. I will bring it, and you can decide. And you can
do you want to? Should I give you my flash drive? How big is the file?
It won't be that big.
I
can put them on a CD. Whatever works for you.
Which is the best way for you to use a USB port?
I can do that, and I'll just bring it to the program tonight.